Hey, everybody. Welcome. My name is Larry Herb. I'm Xbox Live's Major Nelson with our distinguished panelists here over to my right. And why don't we start over here and we'll just kind of go down and introduce everybody. We are going to do questions and answers, Q&A, throughout the event. But I would like to say, as I am recording this for a podcast, so if you don't want to have your voice on the air, don't ask a question. So why don't we start over here and we're going to go through and we'll introduce ourselves.
I'm MC Wilson. I'm the host of Broadcast Gamer, which is a weekly podcast on gaming.
I'm Julianne Greer. I'm the executive editor of The Escapist magazine, also editorial director of Themis Group Media, which includes Warcry Network as well.
I'm Brian Crescenti, the editor of Kotaku and the gaming writer for the Rocky Mountain News.
Christopher Grant, I'm the managing editor for Joystick and the Joystick-affiliated blogs.
Great, thanks, guys. So we're here to talk about blogging and podcasting, all these things that have really cropped up over the past couple years, and how they are impacting the media, and more importantly, also how they're impacting you, the audience, the gamers. So some of the other guys, I know Brian has a background. Brian, are you taking photos? Is that what you're doing?
Okay.
The funny thing is we're all blogging you, and you're all blogging us, so it's going to kind of be a weird thing going
on
here.
It's an addiction. I can't
it's
stop
like
it.
It's like a meta thing. It's
blog.
It's deep, man.
But what I'd like to do is, Brian, I want to start off with you.
Okay.
You're actually, I don't know if people know this or how you present this, but you're actually also a regular journalist as well. Not that everyone else is not a regular journalist, but you also work for a regular piece of media.
Right. I've been a full-time reporter for for newspapers for about 11 years. And since January, I've been, for the past 10 and a half years, I was a police reporter. So that means I covered crime for different newspapers. And in January, The Rocky made me a full-time gaming writer, which means I get to sit around and play games all the time and write about it and piss off all the people I used to work for.
So I wanted to start with you. I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, how has the blogging side of what you do changed from what your normal traditional media role has been?
You know, it's really interesting. I'm on one of the groups that are redesigning the newspaper, the Rocky Mountain News, right now. Because newspapers, the big expense for newspapers are the cost of print, so paper. So papers are constantly trying to get smaller without letting people realize they're getting smaller. So the paper keeps shrinking and shrinking. And so right now they're trying to figure out a way to make the newspaper do more with less. And I think a lot of that is because they're losing readership, and they realize that, I've heard people say at least that they think that's because of things like blogging. People, I think, are less willing to go to traditional forms of media to get their information because, you know, why go to a newspaper that's going to have, I get a page or two-thirds of a page once a week to write about gaming. Or you could go to a site like Joystick or Kotaku or The Escapist. You can go somewhere that just deals with what you want to read about and just get that information all the time, and there's no sort of space limits.
So does anybody else have anything to add there? Because I want to take this a step further.
No, nothing?
Is that okay? How is your relationship, any of you, and I'm going to broaden this out now to all of you guys, how has your relationship changed with how does it exist with the PR firms? And the guys that are trying to get you, for instance, Brian, you know, people that were trying to get you a few years ago before you started blogging versus now, do PR agencies get it? I want to go right down the line here and ask you guys.
We'll start
over here on the left.
Okay. All right.
Really, so far, I haven't had much of a relationship with PR agencies.
Which is good, trust me.
It's mostly been advertisers. A lot of people are very curious about how they can profit from podcasting because it is something that has been getting a push from some big hardware developers, namely Apple. They bundled podcasting support with iTunes, and most people who get podcasts use iTunes, and Apple themselves advertises podcasts as a feature of the iPod. So there are a lot of companies that are wondering how they can make money off of podcasting, and that's mostly what I hear from. I don't really hear from PR firms very much yet.
So it's advertisers.
Right.
Okay.
PR firms don't really know what to do with The Escapist. We don't tend to do reviews and previews in the traditional sense. We mainly cover gamer culture, so they kind of don't really know why we're contacting them when we do. It tends to be to do a profile on a person or a game or a company as a whole. So I have kind of an unusual relationship with PR people, I guess, for media. On the WarCry side of things, we work very closely with them. WarCry is a network of fan sites for massively multiplayer games. So we're always trying to talk to the devs and have the most up-to-date information on the games for our community. So it's kind of two extremes of the PR question.
It's kind of been interesting for me because I, for a long time and still now, I have two sets of contacts. I have one contact. I'm trying to think of a company that does this. It's changing a little. But like Nintendo, I used to have one contact who dealt with me for the newspaper and then another contact who dealt with me for blogging. Microsoft, up until I think 3 or 4 months ago, was doing that. And so I would get two different types of pitches, and it was completely, I mean, you could really see the difference. And still, like with press releases, I'll get, for the Rocky Mountain News, I'll get a press release. Well, I'll get, for Kotaku, I'll get a press release like the day that all the fan press and the blogs get the press release. And then like a week later, I'll get the same exact press release on the Rocky. And like I've asked PR people, I'm like, why are you guys sending these out delayed? And of course they deny it. But I don't think it takes an extra week to travel like to my office as compared to my house. So I think what's going on is that companies are starting to see that, first off, that blogging has a lot of reach and has a lot of ability to affect things like buzz, and that mainstream deals with a totally different audience. They're typically dealing with an audience that doesn't play games, or if they play games, are not as sort of hardcore. So they're trying to sort of change the message a little bit. It's kind of interesting.
At Joystick, our relationship with PR tends to be somewhat antagonistic. A lot of things we're doing operate outside of their purview, so their job is to control communication and to try and steer it, and so a lot of times we'll kind of circumvent that and we get nasty grams if it's something that they don't want released. Or if it's, a lot of times we'll contact them for certain things or stories and we just don't have much of a working relationship with them. So the larger we get, the more difficult it becomes for them to ignore us. And so some companies have really gone out of their way to approach us and to work with us, companies like Microsoft. And other companies completely ignore us, and we can't get people on the phone, we can't get responses to stories we put up, we can't get clarifications. So if we're trying to, reduce the noise on the internet, add more signal and clarify things that have been misstated repeatedly, sometimes we have a very difficult time doing that because we kind of operate outside their boundaries.
Chris, do you think that is because the traditional agencies don't know how to deal with you guys?
I think, with podcasting
and blogging?
I think so.
They're just scared.
Microsoft uses Edelman, and Edelman has made, as a PR agency, a concerted effort to explore online media. One of Edelman's vice presidents, Steve Rebell, runs a very popular blog. And so as a company, you could tell that Edelman takes online media seriously. But there's other sites, and it's funny because now we get larger and we actually have sites that we've contacted in the past and tried to talk to. Well, all of a sudden email us out of the blue and say, hey, guys, great, we love the site, really cool, let's work together. It's like, I emailed you last week and you didn't email me back. So it's changing, obviously, and it's becoming more difficult to ignore, but it's definitely, there's still some kind of antagonism there. And basically, one of the things that blogs are doing is they're kind of questioning that hierarchy that the PR companies have instituted, where you have game sites that, vie for exclusives and work to get coverage, and they work very hands-on. And so we kind of view our lack of cooperation with the PR companies as a badge of honor. We don't really need to work with them to do what we need to do. We kind of exist outside of that.
Do all of you think that PR agencies are now just antiquated because they don't know how to deal with us as bloggers and podcasters, and that we're moving so fast? I like to call it, we're in the era of hyper-communication. I think all four of you will agree, where the conversation we have with the people out there, the audience, at 9 o'clock in the morning may be rapidly different than the conversation we may have with them at 6 o'clock in the evening or even 9 o'clock in the evening. So it's hyper. Is that the general feeling among you guys? I mean, I know it's stressful for me as a blogger that when I'm off the grid for a day, I feel like I'm totally unplugged. Is that kind of the same with you guys? Anybody?
I think things tend to happen quicker than a lot of, a PR agency can't monitor every blog on the internet. So the way the blogosphere can turn on a dime, or one story could break and then completely morph, I think they have a difficult time managing that in a convenient time frame. So things, I mean, we'll have stories up, and they'll contact us 2 days later and say, we have a problem with this. And it's like, well, to be honest with you, number one, it's 3 pages back already, you know. And number two, we're not going to take it down. And even if we do, somebody's going to Google it. It's already been republished. It's already on the blogosphere. I mean, you can't expect this stuff to not propagate. So I do think that in some degree, in that respect, they're antiquated. I think at least what they're trying to do with us is antiquated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the problem is that people still view blogging like they try to liken it to something like a newspaper, and it's really more like TV. I mean, you watch TV coverage, if something's breaking or is a big story, they'll put it up there, and as the story changes and as they find out that they were wrong or that there are differences, they'll just do new broadcasts. The problem, of course, is that with TV, unless someone's taping it, once they say it, it disappears. So if they want to correct it, they just have to do another broadcast. With the blog, once you type it, it's there, and someone might grab it, and it can propagate, and you know, it's sort of more concrete. So in some sense, it's got sort of the worst aspects of both print and TV. And so, I think bloggers are starting to try to figure out ways to deal with that. And I think we all sort of deal differently with having to change stories or correct stories. I mean, do you go back and change the original post that's 3 pages in, or do you do a new post? It's something that you have to, we still have to figure out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, blogging by its very nature is subjective. It is somebody's opinion, and that is pretty much the bane of PR's existence when they don't know what someone's going to say and they don't have any kind of rules of objectivity. So I do think that we need to still work a few things out with that. If we've already said something 2 days ago, you know, it's out there. Everyone who reads our blog has then posted it on their own blog, and then so on and so forth. So yeah, we need to improve the communication between PR and blogs, I think.
One of the great things about podcasts, in my opinion, is that as opposed to blogging, you have the option of bringing somebody involved in the development of a game or project on your show and give them an audience to talk to the gamers and the listeners out there so that their excitement over what they're working on comes through when they talk about the game. This is actually one of the reasons I've really liked Major Nelson's show. Almost every week he has at least one interview with somebody working on something about the Xbox, and it might be something that I was not very excited about, but I listen to his show and I listen to them talk about it, and that gets me much more interested because I can hear how excited they are and they can explain things about the game that I didn't know. And since he also runs a blog, that allows a lot of the listeners to comment on when he's going to have an interview, to say, can you ask him about this or that? And so 9 times out of 10, any questions I have about the game or that I had about the game do get asked. And aside from that, I learned things about the game that I wasn't particularly aware of beforehand, which helps a lot.
So I want to actually, I don't know where my stage manager is. Can I grab the wireless mic? Because I want to go out, because being back here, it's really tough to hear what you guys are saying. So I'm gonna move a little bit and kind of walk around. I want to open up the floor for some questions here and have a discussion.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go right down in front here. This is much better. I can see you guys. I'm like way back there. Let's go up here. What's your name and what's your question?
My name is Jeff, and I'm actually curious about the business model behind what you guys do for those that aren't corporate shills.
Notice how he looked at me for that.
We're all apparently corporate shills.
and particularly even The Escapist, which is, I think, a great magazine, which I consider it a magazine.
Thank you.
With little bit of advertising. How are you, besides Google AdSense, how are you guys generating revenue to compensate for the amount of time you're investing in these activities?
It's advertising based, both in the magazine, we have our print style ads, but on our first anniversary, we launched our portal, which allows for more traditional advertising units. It's a young publication, and we're still trying to get people interested in advertising with us. As I said before, we're not the typical format, so PR agencies and media buyers alike are kind of like, I don't know who your audience is. We don't know who we're trying to talk to with this. So we're working on it, but it is advertising based completely.
At Joystick, I don't know if you know this, being a corporate shill, but we're actually owned by AOL Time Warner. So our advertising, part of the purchase was engineering from a business point of view so that they could take all that stuff off of Weblogs Inc., which is the company I write for. I don't write for AOL directly. They could take that onus off of us. I mean, we don't talk about advertising. We don't do advertising. We don't touch any of it. You know, we're not beholden to any sponsors. We can write whatever we want. If there's a problem, it's up to ad sales gremlins that work over there, and they could get us new advertisers if they don't like what we wrote. So, I mean, the business model for Weblogs Inc. and for Gawker is to pay people to blog, which is kind of unique in blogging. I mean, there's probably people blogging from this audience that aren't being paid to blog. So, I mean, that's a little different. And with group blogs like Kotaku or Joystick, they're a little larger and they have more content and there's more reach because of that kind of focus. But I think smaller blogs, there's growing options for advertising revenue, but it's not a lot. You know, it's Google AdSense. It's you know, there's groups like John Battelle has, what is it called, Federated Media, and they run some advertising for some other blogs, and they're trying to, you know, make some of these smaller blogs and sites larger and use them. But there's it's difficult, like podcasting, it's difficult, and people don't know how to quantify it. You know, you'd have a very difficult time, I think, earning serious revenue off of a blog.
Yeah, I mean, the way Kotaku works, I mean, it's owned by Gawker Media. Gawker does all the advertising stuff. I basically just write stuff, and I have 4 or 5 people writing for me, so I kind of oversee them, but we never see anything that has to do with advertising. They just pop up on our site. I think if you're trying to make a living as a blogger, the best thing to do is to try to, one of the best things to do is to try to get hired by a company that's paying bloggers to blog. I have a personal blog. I don't know. Do you have a personal blog?
Yeah, not about gaming or anything, but
it's about cross-dressing. Just kidding.
Really?
Anyway, I'm gonna pay for that. I have a personal blog, and it doesn't make a penny. It actually cost me a lot of money. I just had to take it offline because it was getting hammered by a bunch of different, like Google and other bots out there, spiders that were sucking up all my bandwidth. $90 in overages for 1 month, and like 100 hits a month. So, yeah, you have to be careful about that. Anyway, I'm sorry? Who the hell am I hosting with? I don't remember. Yeah, it's some crappy host. I'll put it on my site. I'm not really sure.
Clearly a crapper.
Totally
a crappy hoster.
But, I mean, there are some other models that are coming up, though. Associated Content, which is a company that was a spinoff of Google. I think their CFO or one of their top people launched this idea. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's kind of new. A friend of mine is one of their VPs. That's why I know about it. And they're doing this model where they basically are getting bloggers, anybody, to go in and write for them. And they pay the bloggers money for however many times that stuff is used and however much cash it generates for this larger site. And I think that's kind of a neat idea.
So it's a pay-for-performance?
Yeah,
is
basically.
Paid content site? Is that the name of it?
Well, no, I think it's just called Associated Content. I think that's...
I think I've linked to them a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. They just finally went... They went live in the last, like, 2 or 3 months. I mean, the content it runs the gamut. I mean, there's stuff that's really horrible, and there's some really interesting stuff, too. But I think that there are people out there trying to figure out ways to make it possible for people to make money writing. I mean, that's the most exciting thing to me. I mean, I've got a couple of people writing for Kotaku now. Typically, when they started, they were not either professional writers or not full-time writers, and now they're starting to sort of do that. Luke Smith, when he started with us, was not a full-time writer, and he went on to 1UP, and he now runs their news thing, and he does that full-time. I think that's amazing. I think that's one of the things that blogs can do for people. It can, you know, it's a way of allowing people to be discovered as writers without having to go through the traditional channels that you have to go through usually.
For podcasting, the only real revenue model right now is advertising, and there are a couple of different ways that you can do that, but primarily, what most companies who would do business with a podcast would do is some of them would go to you directly and make a little deal where they sponsor you for a set period of time, but the majority of podcasts that do advertising do it through an established podcasting agency like Podtrac so that you can set up a service with them so that every time somebody downloads your show, Podtrac knows about it. And that way they can, I mean, you get it the same way you normally would. You click on a link or iTunes downloads it for you. But by using a service like that, they can keep track of who's downloading the show, how many times it was downloaded by an individual person, and where it was downloaded from. So they do have some information that they can quantify that with.
We had a question right here, correct?
My name is Rob Stevens. I've been a freelance journalist for about a decade or so, and I've got kind of a two-part question. The first part is, as journalists, there have been a lot of issues lately with websites like IGN and whatnot where they've pulled content back offline once PR has gotten to them and said, hey, we don't want this out yet. And I know there's a lot of kind of backroom deals in terms of getting exclusives and stuff on their website kind of in exchange for pulling content. And I kind of wanted to get your opinions on that. And the second one, and I apologize to the panel, is for Larry over here. And I apologize for John because I know he's back there too. But from a corporate blogging standpoint, and specifically with Microsoft, how do you balance trying to have as much transparency and openness and talking about the projects you're working on and some of the things that are going on, and balancing PR's desire to hold certain announcements for certain time periods and things like that?
So I'll answer that question first, then I'll throw it back to you guys. Great question. It is a little frustrating for me because, as the corporate shill, as I'm being called here, it is a little challenging. I have actually, during the planning of the Xbox 360 before we launched, there was actually points when I was in meetings and they were starting to talk about things, I got up and walked out of the meetings because I didn't want to, I just didn't want to be part of it. I didn't want to be able to know what was going on and feel like I was deceiving my readers. It is challenging. I mean, my whole goal at the end is really just to convey the excitement of this great product that I'm working on. And it's very challenging. Every day I struggle with the things that are in my head and what can I say and how can I say it and be truthful as a gamer, be truthful to the audience, and keep my job. I mean, it is challenging. I mean, there's one rule at Microsoft that I'm sure you've probably all heard of about blogging, and it's kind of crazy, but it's just called blog smart. Don't do something stupid. So I have to be very careful when I'm looking, and I've seen a couple of PR things, like for something, for instance, I know something that's happening tomorrow that I'm dying to talk about, and I can't talk about it. So there's certain things that are happening that I have to shield myself from, and the bigger they are, I kind of take a step back. And that's why it's great that we've got the Gamerscore blog with John and those guys, because they're kind of the PR blog, and I can kind of step back and let them handle a lot of the PR-y stuff, and I can kind of go away and talk about all the cool, you know, the camera and the vibrating functions, as it were, and some other cool stuff. So it actually has been easier for me now, as opposed to 2 years ago or 3 years ago before the Gamerscore blog existed, which is the unofficial PR blog. So it's very challenging. But at the end of the day, I just want to be able to convey the excitement about what we're working on with my audience. Anyway, I'll throw it back up here.
On the pulling content thing, it's interesting. We actually just got asked about 2 weeks ago by Step 3, which is Activision's online PR firm, to pull shots of the Wii Dev Kit from a THQ event in New York. IGN was there. They put the pictures up, and I guess they weren't supposed to. There was some kind of NDA that they'd agreed to that they weren't aware of, and so we had already run the shots and links, and they were all over the internet. I mean, it wasn't just us. But what happens a lot of times when either Joystick or I'm sure Kotaku links something is, you know, as soon as it hits that point, then it just explodes and then spreads out a lot wider. It's like scattershot. So they call us and ask us to take it down. We say, well, we didn't sign any NDA about not posting those pictures. You know, that's your problem with IGN. And they said, well, IGN pulled it. We said, sure, great. I mean, that's not our problem. IGN owns the images. They took them. If IGN wants us to take them down, that we'd have to respect it since they're the copyright owners. But we're not going to take it down based on an NDA we didn't sign. So they contacted IGN, and IGN asked us to remove their copyrighted images so that they don't get any trouble with THQ, and THQ doesn't get into trouble with Nintendo, because Nintendo were the ones who enforced this rule about not showing the dev kit. And so it's kind of roundabout. But well, that's what we try and explain to them. You know, not only has this happened yesterday because you're a day late to finding us, but it's already happened. It's already on the net. You can already find Google's cache. And once it hits Joystick and a couple hundred thousand people read it, it's everywhere. I mean, you can't stop people from seeing it. So, and why would you want to? It's a blurry picture of a black Wii dev kit. Like, I'm not even kidding. I'm on the phone with people for an hour talking about this stuff, and it's bizarre. But it's the kind of thing that, I mean, IGN in that situation, they've pulled stuff for lesser reasons, but in that situation, they signed an NDA that they shouldn't have signed. We have a policy of not signing NDAs, period, because if some news breaks or gets leaked elsewhere, we can't not post it because we signed something. So they signed an NDA that they probably shouldn't have, and were forced to pull a post for whatever reason.
I agree. No. The thing is that, I mean, it is a sort of bizarre relationship. I think this gets back to the whole PR companies and developers and third parties are trying to sort of get used to this idea of blogging and the power that in the last year or two, it's sort of exploded. They're used to dealing with magazines that have this long... I mean, the reason that there are NDAs out there, the traditional reason, is that a magazine has to print way ahead of time. So they get them to sign an NDA so they don't go around talking about it, and so they can get this thing, review it, whatever it is, and get it in the magazine, then have it run at a certain time. But the problem is, I think that sort of the use of NDAs has been subverted, and there's a lot of goofy NDAs out there that they... I remember once when I was working for the Rocky, someone sent me... I was doing a hardware review for some really crappy MP3 player, and the guy sent me an NDA. I can't remember if it was an NDA or an embargo, but... sort of the same thing. And I was reading through it, and one of the things it said in there was, I agree not to say anything negative about it. And I'm like, what the hell are you guys talking about? And the guy's like, oh, no, just ignore that. And I'm like, I'm not going to ignore it. It's in the contract. Mm-hmm. So we ended up not reviewing the thing. But, I mean, that's the thing. First, part of it is they create these NDAs. Lawyers create these NDAs, typically, who don't understand the nature of what's going on. And then people, you know... might not be an editor. I mean, it might be like a writer will sign something without really reading through it or understanding what they're agreeing to, and you create all these problems. But with blogs, I mean, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Once it's out there, it's out there. I mean, Kotaku, and I'm guessing that we probably get the same amount of these. I mean, I get at least once a month, sometimes once a week, people saying, can you take this down? I think the bigger companies understand that, you know, they might tell us that they're unhappy with something, but they won't ask us to take it down because they understand we're not going to. And that's just going to, you know, we'll get into an argument about it. But, you know, there's still PR companies that will contact us and say, you know, please take this down. And typically we say no unless there's some sort of legal reason to take it down. And even then, sometimes you have to be careful. It gets a little dangerous because you're sort of blurring the line between journalism and blogging. And you know, when it comes to like a newspaper, for instance, if you agree to take stuff down, you start creating
a precedent.
Precedent where you're basically other people can come up and say, hey, you took it down for them, so you need to take it down for us, and they've got a legal precedent to make you. So you have to be very careful about that. And I don't know about Joystick, but I know Kotaku's been sued or threatened to sue several times. Burger King, I think, was the last one where they threatened to sue us because we found out about their Xbox 360 games. And, you know, it was I can't remember how we got it, but it was something that we got through sort of public information. And they wanted us to take it down. We refused. They threatened to sue us. We got a bazillion hits because they threatened to sue us. And then they got quiet and went away. So you just have to be careful, I think.
I basically agree, too. I mean, if there's a legal reason to take it down, you sign an NDA or some other such thing, take it down, you know. But we have had PR people contact us specifically on WarCry. We have a blog on WarCry, which is very, very raw sometimes. And our blogger says whatever he says, and if our PR people don't like it, they'll sometimes call us and ask us to take stuff down. One time in particular, they said take it down or we pull the ads, and they stopped their ad buy with us because we refused to take it down. So you do bump up against that sometimes, and that is their power over you. But, you know, luckily we have a kind boss who allows us that freedom to have that integrity and to not pull that stuff down. So.
All right. Any other question up here? Go right up here in the blue shirt. So basically, PR people, don't bother calling any of these guys. They're not going to take it down. Just to recap.
Great. Hi, my name is Seth Robeson, and I write the gaming culture column for gamertransit.com. Everybody got that? Okay. My biggest issue right now is that my best ideas for columns come from talking to other gamers and living where I live. I mean, PAX is pretty much it. How do I attract more people to the site that I work for and get a conversation going about games and culture without spamming message boards saying, come look at me, come look at me?
Well, you could always, I'll go to Brian, you could always use some inflammatory headlines, right?
Ooh. Hey, but he doesn't get credit for that. Major Nelson does. I mean, it's funny because that's something that's sort of changed over time, too. When I started writing Kotaku, it had been around for about 2 months. And I think, I can't remember, and I can't go back that far and look. I basically have the same stats that anybody can look at for Kotaku. I think it was getting 20,000 page views a month. It was really low. And so I would write stuff. I had never really blogged before. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I'd go to sites, and I didn't think I was spamming, but I would go on to a site and say, hey, check out this story I wrote. I mean, I was very upfront about it. Well, I pissed off a lot of people, and I didn't mean to, but, you know, I've now learned, you know, don't do that. For some reason, it's like a blogger faux pas. You don't go in and talk about your own stories. But I think, frankly, it's gotten a lot worse. I think people now that, like, it's about money, and, you know, for some people, I think, or at least for some companies, it's about money. That sounded really bad. Anyway, it's about you know, trying to get, I guess, a lot of people to read your site, and so people just get really ticked off about that. I mean, I try, and I think Joystick tries, to really give credit to sites that find original content. We're always looking for original content that someone else has written. We do our own original content, but, you know, it's great when a new voice sort of pops up out there. Of course, you know, there's a bazillion sites, so it's I have no problem with people emailing me. We get a lot of emails every day, and it's funny. Some people apologize for sending us tips, and I'm like, why are you apologizing? You know, please send me tips every day if you want to.
And actually, Brian, you actually send me tips as well, and I don't mind it because I'm pretty sure with all the panel, we don't have time to read all the blogs. You know, there's so much going on in there. We always feel like we're missing something. So I love getting the tips. Continue on here.
I mean, as far as, you know, having people find your site in the blogosphere, depending on what software you're using, there's trackback software. I mean, stuff you write, if you link to another column, it's going to automatically get listed in their comments as a trackback. So, you know, be a part of the conversation. There's a giant conversation going on in the blogosphere every day. If it's something that's unique and original, tip Joystick, tip Kotaku, submit it to Dig, submit it to Netscape. I mean, there's all kinds of social, Reddit, Newsvine. I mean, there's all kinds of social news services that you can put things that people will find. If they find it and they like it, it's going to start a conversation. Other people are going to write about that. You're going to see them writing about it, and you can write back. I mean, the stuff is very viral. I mean, it spreads very quickly. And you've seen small stories explode into huge things that end up getting on, you know, television or CNN or whatever. You know, it's the right angle, and it's the right conversation. But.
Anything else? Okay, we had a question right here.
Hi, my name is Cyril Lachelle, and I run the website defunctgames.com. And a lot of my contacts that I get, I've actually been doing this for about 5 years now, come from E3. With the downsizing of E3, I'm wondering if you think that is going to limit how many journalists, like young journalists and bloggers and whatnot, will actually be able to get those contacts.
You guys want to take that?
It seems to me like that's by design. Yeah. It seems like they downsized it to block out smaller groups. I mean, you know, I think they would much rather have a situation where it's more easily controllable and manageable, and they could cherry-pick the outlets that they want to talk to, and they could do it in a situation that's underneath their control. They can decide what you see when you see it. It could be guided walkthroughs, you know. And I think, you know, I'm not sure what to make of the new E3. I don't know if sites like Kotaku and Joystick are going to be a part of it. You know, I would hope they would be. We're large. We have a large readership, and I think the readers would want to see us there. But, you know, ESA is still handling admission and how many people are going to be admitted, and there's all these big newspapers, and the newspapers have a, you know, huge audience, even though it's not necessarily gamers. You know, I don't know. But it definitely does take an impact on smaller sites who require those things, not only to meet people, but to kind of, you know, get your hands on the industry. I think it helps a lot. But the kind of uncontrollable nature of the blogosphere, I don't think helped E3, in their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think E3 was broken. I don't think it had to be killed, but it needed to be fixed. I mean, I enjoyed it. I only went to two E3s. Both times I ended up getting very sick, and I frankly think it was because of E3. I mean, I got a flu, I think, both times, and it was just, it just wears you out. I mean, you can't imagine. And, like, I know, I mean, you probably felt the same way. It's just overwhelming. You can't do your job. There's too many people. There's too many stories.
Bad Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Bad Wi-Fi. I would like to point something out. Is I just got back from the German Game Convention, which is the E3 of Europe. And it is a phenomenal game convention. I like it so much better than E3.
It's just so much better organized. It's a larger venue. There's much more going on. It feels much more fan-based. And I can tell when I was there, unfortunately I don't speak German, but there was a lot of German bloggers there, and they were covering that thing within an inch of its life. And I think what they're saying up here is exactly right, is that E3, it was broken, but I don't think it needed to be brought out in the back and shot in the head. but it's definitely needs to evolve into something a little bit more German.
I mean, German. Efficient. No, well, and the other thing is, I mean, the big fear I have, I'm fairly certain I'll be able to go to the new E3 because if they don't accept bloggers, they might accept, you know, Scripps Howard, the newspaper chain I work for. So I feel like I'm going to have a door in. But, you know, what about the ability for a developer or a company to blackball a journalist? You know, this guy isn't. I would like to think that won't happen because there's so many different developers out there. So if you're anti-Sony, maybe you're pro-Microsoft, or if you're anti-Microsoft, you're pro-Nintendo. So someone out there will speak up for you, but we don't know. And, you know, in theory, it's by invitation only, so the ESA could just decide we don't want this guy to be here because we don't like what he has to say. And that's a little scary, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because even as a exhibitor at Microsoft, I know that I haven't heard, and I'm way down the chain in these things, but we don't know what's happening. We expect to hear something probably around the beginning of the year. So E3 next year, it's kind of a head-scratcher for us right now. Let's go on to the next question. We had something right over here. All right.
The Consumer Electronics Association is actually looking at filling in the gap for a possibility of reclaiming what was E3. So I would encourage people to go to CEA.org and let them know that there is a market for people to get back out there for a new type of E3. My question, though, is the internet changed print media as far as gaming coverage. How is blogging going to change the traditional website? Is the traditional website coverage dead? I mean, naturally, there's Evolve or Die, but there's still magazines around. So
I think part of it, I mean, look at something like The Escapist, right? With The Escapist, instead of every month, every week, you're getting a whole magazine, if you don't mind using the term, a whole magazine full of really interesting content. You can get that once a week for free online when you want to get it. You go to a site like Joystick or Kotaku, you can get that stuff, once an hour. For the savvy gamer who really wants this stuff, there's less and less of a reason. I mean, there's long-form content, there's short-form content, something that the magazines and the big portal websites are having a hard time keeping up with. They're not producing content on the caliber of The Escapist at the rate that The Escapist is producing it. They're not producing news at the content or rate or, in some respects, I would say quality at the rate that blogs are producing it. So I think that it's just basically democratizing and spreading out. I mean, this gets into the whole Chuck Klosterman debate where the point is that we don't have these kinds of icons anymore. The icons of the magazine industry, EGM's heyday, doesn't really exist anymore because it's been so flattened out and the plane is so much wider right now. And if you really are into MMOs, you go to an MMO blog and you read it there. So I just think there's less of a market for it. I mean, look, we're at a expo right now for fans of a video game webcomic. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, no offense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, it's amazing. I think this is an amazing time for all media right now because no one knows what's going on. Newspaper companies are scared shitless. I mean, they made me go from cop reporter to a game writer because of Kotaku. Not, it wasn't the other way around. They saw Kotaku and they're like, ooh, he's got a lot of readers. Let's make him write that for the newspaper. But don't be offensive and don't scare anybody and, write it for a newspaper.
That doesn't apply for Kotaku, I guess.
No, not at all. See, I was a half zinger. It was a zing. Yeah.
I think it's also important to point out that podcasting, we do podcasting all the time. That's something that traditional media, didn't really start doing, although they're starting to do it now. Are you finding that out with podcasting as well?
I tend to think that podcasting is a way of expanding on traditional media because Blogs are great for when you want up to the minute news, but you have to be in front of a computer. Not everybody is. A lot of people commute on their way to or from work, or spend a lot of time waiting in lines for the Penny Arcade panel. And so having something to listen to, they like that. They like getting their news on the way to or from work or wherever they are. Things like podcasts will allow them to do that. So it's all forms of media, just as Brian said, are changing. And podcasting and blogging are both part of that.
Let's go back. I'm sorry, do you have anything to add?
I think you can look at radio as being pretty, you know, dead end. I mean, I live in Philadelphia, and every radio station in Philadelphia, as far as I can tell, is owned by Clear Channel, and they're all horrible.
Right.
I haven't listened to the radio in years. I listen to podcasts.
I used to work in radio, and that's why I got out, because it sucks.
But it's the same thing. I mean, people are seeing the radio as being more and more kind of vacant. So find what you want. Find your own content.
Right.
Go on iTunes and find, you know, an opera podcast and listen to that if that's what you're into, because you're not going to find it on mainstream radio.
That's ultimately what the new media is about. It's you can find what you want in the style that you want, whenever you want, basically. So that's what podcasting is adding. Just forget the radio. Plug in your iPod to your car and listen to that, or listen to it on the subway. Same thing with blogging. If you have 5 minutes of downtime and you want to catch up on what's going on, you can go to your favorite blog and find who you tend to agree with. Like when you're looking at movie reviews, you find your reviewer that you like. You go to your blog who covers what you like, and you can catch up on anything. So.
All right. Let's go. I'm going to go way deep here, right in the center, to make it really difficult for everybody. All right.
I'm a developer, and just starting out on my own with a couple friends. And I was just wondering how, what the best way to get a game reviewed would be.
Send us a game.
What kind of bribes do you guys like?
Make it really easy for
yes,
us
lots
to
of
review
cash.
Your game.
Okay. What kind of beer do you guys like? Can we send you
like German beer.
I'm a gin and tonic
guy. We have contact forms and email addresses on the website. You know, you can contact us anytime. One of the things about blogs is we're open. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I have say they read something on Joystick and it was wrong. And I was like, well, we have a public comment system.
Yeah.
Leave me a note. You know, we correct stuff all the time. You see the updates on the site. We're constantly changing it. If a PR company contacts us, they contacted us recently about Kaz Harai's statement that they wouldn't have... he said that they would have 2 million PlayStation 2s by the holiday or something. And so they contacted us and said, well, he was mistaken. He meant to say 4 million. I was like, well, he didn't say 4 million. He said 2 million, so that's his fault. You know, call Kaz and yell at him. But we'll update stuff, you know. So you can leave that way. You can leave a tips form. But the communication is there. I mean, I don't mind. Brian and I are actually both on the Indie Games Forum festival panel. So, I mean, we're playing indie games, and we're playing smaller stuff, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny. I think the greatest thing that blogging does to media is it tears down the boundaries between the readers and the writers. It allows you guys to talk to the people. I mean, we're not...
Or developers and writers.
Exactly.
I wish developers
talk
to us more. They can't.
Well, it's funny because, in a newspaper, traditionally as a newspaper writer, we don't feel this way, but I think readers feel like they're up on pedestals. You can't approach someone who writes for a magazine or a newspaper. I mean, I write stories and have for a long time, you know, that are pretty big stories that have gotten national and international attention, and like I get no emails. And I go on Kotaku and I write some rambly crap, which is what I'm known for, and I get like a bazillion emails about it. And it's funny because it's not because it's better or it's more informative, it's because people feel comfortable talking to me. They feel like, you know, they can just email me up and or IM me and just tell me their opinions about it. And I think that's fantastic. And, you know, it's not just readers, it is developers. And like we just did a review, Eliza just did a review of Eats, that's how it's pronounced, I think. So yeah, we try to, and I love the fact that there's a huge indie scene, and we try to support it by doing more game reviews on indie games, just because I think that's sort of where the salvation of gaming is.
I think another opportunity is also maybe as a developer, you should start your own blog. Because I know I'm always interested in seeing what blogs are, what they're saying, so I think that's also critical as well. I mean, we're all about making more and more bloggers out there, so, you know, put a little piece up about what your game's about. So, all right, we have a question over here.
Don't leave.
What's your name?
Hi, I'm Yuzo, and I'm here with Tobin. We do a gaming podcast, and we're just starting up, and we're trying to find out, do you have any tips on how to get interviews with either developers, publishers, PR people, We're figuring that these sorts of things are the things that people want to listen to, or at least there's a draws to the podcast to be able to gain your audience and that sort of thing. So we're just kind of bootstrapping. We bought, you know, mics and little iRiver recorders and that sort of thing, but we're having a hard time getting access.
There's a developer for you right over here.
Yeah.
Ooh, good.
I would say talk to MC Wilson. I mean, he seems to be... Yeah. That's his thing.
Well, for what I usually do is I contact the publisher or the PR firm for that publisher. Usually everybody goes through some sort of PR firm that handles different games for different developers. I'm on their mailing lists, and so they send me press releases for a lot of stuff. So if there's a game that I want to feature... Or that's basically it. It's on my show. It's just stuff that I want to feature because I've never actually been approached to cover anything on my show except for one occasion for Video Games Live. But for most games, publishers I think and PR firms have in mind who they want to give coverage to. Sorry, but for my show, generally I just approach publishers and developers directly and ask them if they would like to come on the show. Sometimes they do, and that's great. Sometimes they do not. Almost every time I've done an interview by phone using Skype and a program called Hot Recorder, because that's just more convenient for them. But just write to them and say, you know, I'm familiar with your game. I would like to give you 15 minutes on my show. Tell them about yourself and how many listeners you have, if you can quantify that, and see what they say.
I think the other thing, just as somebody who I travel with my equipment all the time. I mean, my equipment's in the back right now recording this, and afterwards I'm going to do some interviews. So that's one of the things is I'll talk to anybody. And if you listen to my show, it's pretty evident that I'll put a microphone in front of anybody. So any other questions? Let's go right in the back here.
Hi, I'm a current college student here, about one semester away from graduating with a telecom and journalism major. Did I just waste about 3 years of my life with using the stuff from the old media? Or is there any way, did I do something wrong or something?
Well, you know, I mean, first off, I have to say, people are always asking me how to become a games journalist or a game journalist, and I always say be a journalist first. I mean, it does help. I don't think you need to do that. You need to be able to write, and I mean, we've got some writers who don't have any journalism experience who I think are fantastic writers, have very strong voices, but there's still always, I think it's important to always have those sort of that core knowledge. I mean, you know, who, what, when, where, why, how. Just basic stuff. It sounds basic, but you know, it's only basic if you do it for a living or do it for a long time. So no, I don't think you've wasted your time. However, I also kind of think that, like, I mean, I have a journalism degree too. I also have an English degree, so I wasted a lot of my time. But yeah, so journalism degrees in general are considered a waste. The best thing to do is to try to get experience as a journalist and then get into the game field. Don't like play a whole bunch of games and decide, okay, I'm ready. I mean, not that that's a problem, because I think, like I said, most of our writers are like that, but it's nice to have a journalism background.
As long as there's newspapers still around, I mean, they're not dead yet.
Yeah.
Probably do you some good, I suppose. I don't have one.
When you talk about wasting time, I have an ancient history degree.
Yeah. American history. So.
Let's give it up for ancient history. Right over here in the center.
Hi, I'm from a marketing and PR agency that really does want to get it.
Boo.
Hi.
to the extent that I said, hey, you know what would be great? Send me to PAX.
Fair enough.
So do you have any advice for a PR agency that wants to get the new media and wants to work well with you?
I would say it's more or less like when you're dealing with us, you're dealing directly with our readers. So you have to be respectful. I mean, a lot of the PR people contact us and they try and deal with us almost as peers or colleagues of theirs, but I don't see it as that. You know, it's a little different. I don't necessarily want to work on exclusives in exchange for certain things. You know, my obligation is to my readers. So a lot of companies, like specifically Microsoft, we can run things and Microsoft can yell at us, but they won't even ask us to take it down. You know, that's inappropriate. And so in general, I think a lot of companies just don't realize that there's that kind of respect to get. And even though we're smaller than a lot of the big sites they work with, they'll be used to working with, you know, GameSpot or IGN with a lot of readers. And so they'll look at us as kind of small chump change, but not realizing that specific sites in the blogosphere, I mean, you know, there's even some sites with a lot less traffic than Joystick or Kotaku, but that have a lot of mind share, something that they say is worth a lot, because we'll read it. You know, the Escapists will read it. It'll be on MT Gamer's podcast. People will talk about it anyway. So a couple people can make a big difference. And the PR companies, I just don't think, have a lot of respect for a lot of the smaller blogs or blogging in general.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it must be a scary time for PR right now, because it's traditionally, if you did PR, I believe, you would know that you have a couple of channels you go to. You go to the local big newspaper, you go to the magazines, and that was it, you know, and you got your message out there. And now, you know, you can't call up every single blogger in the country, because it's about every single person in the country. I mean, everybody blogs. So the question is, like, how do you decide who to reach out to and how do you reach out to them? Yeah, I don't know if there really is a good answer. I mean, I guess you just have to sort of keep an eye on, I mean, like, I've got, and I'm sure you have, all of us probably have, like, I have like 150 blogs on my aggregator. And like after a month,
that's it.
Right now, that's it. That's all I can read. I mean, I also go to all the sites and, you know, I check them out. But the thing is, I mean, it changes constantly. I mean, there are sites that are on my aggregator that like a month ago were like new and no one heard of them. And now they're like ancient. I mean, it's only a month and there's already a bunch of new voices out there. And it's just so weird, because I keep thinking at some point there's going to be an information glut and people are just going to like stop reading.
Turn off.
Yeah, turn off the internet and go home. But
I would say good luck. That would be my best.
Yeah. You're screwed. Sorry.
That's a really tough question, but I'm glad that you're asking that. One thing you could probably do is to look at the content and how it's presented and the kinds of things we tend to cover. I know that The Escapist has kind of a different feel than a lot of other things on the web. We tend to go after totally different stories. So that would be one thing, make it easy for us to grab on and be relevant to our readers. We also work from an editorial calendar, which is available on the web 6 months at a time. So take a look at that. If you see that you have something that's related to that, then, you know, be glad to take a look at it.
For podcasts, if you're kind of wading into that whole subset of the media industry, then one of the best things to do might be to check out a podcast directory like iTunes. Go to their gaming section. They do have a list of ones ranked by popularity, so you can see which ones people are listening to. And you can check those out and see if it's something that you'd want to work together with.
I'd like to add something. Just by the mere fact you're here, I think it's incredible, because there's a lot of companies out there, marketing companies, right, that don't get it. And I think it gets back to what we were saying earlier. You need to be part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to step up and say, hey, that may not be right, or hey, how about take a look at this, or hey, did you know about this feature of this product or this or so whatnot? So I think it's really incredible that you're even here and being part, injecting yourself into the conversation. And also, I think for bloggers, I mean, I go through this all the time, is who do I talk to about this product? So making sure whatever clients you're working with know how, you know, have it on their website, that how bloggers like us can get in touch with you. Because I don't have time to look through some crazy flash site that the marketing department put out to figure out where the contact form is. I want to know who you are, how I can get in touch with you. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a big one. Single point of contact is a big deal.
Yeah.
If you have to deal with, like, EA has a different person for every product they release. And so sometimes you can find out who that person is. Other times you can't. Sometimes you get the wrong name and the wrong person. I mean, it's impossible. It's labyrinthine. It's not mm-hmm. worth it. But
EA's system is insane. And they changed it like 3 years ago. They used to have it set up by the form of media. This is before blogging got big, which is pretty funny. So once blogging got big, they decided to trash the idea that would have worked perfect for blogging. And so they now have, yeah. It's like, and you have to, literally, you have to get this list that's updated. I don't know how often it's updated, but it's like guy's name, the game he's working
too
on.
Too frequently.
Yeah, and it's just insane. Yeah.
Questions over here. Right over here. Yes, sir.
Hi, Jason Dobson. I write for Gama Sutra. And were you going to say something? And I also run a personal blog called eToy Chest. I've been doing it for a few years. And this is an issue that's been haunting me. We get a healthy number of hits, but there's no real sense of community. The content, or the comments, rather, you get maybe, you know, two comments most on a news post that, you know, you spend a lot of time on. And so I was just wondering, I mean, should we be worried about this sense of community that I've been striving to get?
I mean, I know Kotaku has been making some efforts to open up their forums more by handing out more invitation codes. But Joystick's open, so we have a lot of people who post whatever. Our problem at Joystick is the larger we get, the more garbage we get in our comments. And I'm sure if there's any
here,
who read Joystick's comments. Major Nelson, we call his comments form his complaint repository.
The complaint desk.
It's why is this demo not out? But we get the strangest comments sometimes, and the problem is that we have a lot of really smart readers, so we've tried implementing systems to isolate good content from bad content, but it requires so much managerial oversight. But I think it'll ultimately happen. It's part of, quote, the conversation. I think sometimes it helps to make your posts inquisitive. You know, seek feedback. Say, you know, hey, what do you think of this? I mean, sometimes if something's particularly stupid that, you know, we always make jokes about how Sony posts write themselves. But sometimes we'll try and not be jerks about it, and we'll say, you know, all right, well, you know, what do you guys think? And we'll let them, you know, do our dirty work for us. And but it helps to kind of ask them to do stuff. I mean, I know a lot of blogs do specific community posts. You know, what are you playing this weekend? You know, what are you? What's your favorite game? You know, it might sound boring, but people like talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. We one of our writers who everybody hates, Florian Eckhart, started...
He's my new favorite writer, though.
Oh, yeah. I get so many emails about him. Thank God I'm not him. So he started doing the, what are you playing this weekend? And initially I was going to tell him to stop it, but it gets the most comments. It's hilarious. People love to talk about what they're playing. Kotaku's got an interesting commenting system, which I did not come up with. For the record, for the first year and a half, we didn't have any commenting, and almost every week I would bother Nick Denton about getting commenting, and he would always say no. And finally we came up with a system that was almost worse than no commenting. Not only is it invite only, but they're individual invites that I have to go get myself and actually email to the person. So every single invite that we send out to every single person, I have to do. And that's fun, let me tell you. So, I think it's important to be able to do that. And I've always thought it was very important. But, you know, what do you do? Do you have a completely open system that can get... I mean, I don't think you guys have spam. You don't
have... We have...
You have a little
they
bit?
They spend a lot of money...
Trying to stop
making
that.
Spam
I mean,
filters.
That's a
so
huge
we do get
problem.
It. We do work on it. We get a lot of, you know, random racist comments.
That's nice. That's always nice.
It's always fun, especially if you're gone for a couple of days and you get back and you have 100 comments.
Yeah, no, I mean, so, like, there is a big, it's like a balancing act. Do you completely open it up and then have problems with spam, with racism, with all kinds of other things? Do you have a constricted system where you have 15 or 20 posts and people get ticked off because they feel like you're being elitist? You know, I think that's one of the things that's sort of this new form of blogging is struggling with. I mean, I think it's very important, but I also don't think it's necessarily... the measure of whether a site's doing well. I mean, you can have a really good site without a lot of comments. I love eToy Chest. And you used to be in Colorado, right?
Right.
See, that's why I love eToy Chest. He was one of the other Denver or Colorado bloggers. There's one now. I think that comments are important, but, you know, like Chris mentioned, one of the good things to do is just ask a question. Start a dialogue with your readers and see if they respond.
So I can tell you this. Sometimes it's, you know, we made a comment about this. I get probably almost 100 comments on every post I make for some reason. A lot of, I would say about 85% are just useless. So you're probably better off not getting a lot of comments right now. Just go with the page views, trust me. Unfortunately, I have to wrap it up here because I'm getting the wrap-up signal from the back. I want to thank everybody who came to. I want to thank especially our panelists. If you missed any of this, I'll have it posted on my blog later on today at majornelson.com. Thank you very much, and enjoy the show.